Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to the Simply Financial podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra. This is episode number 4 of season 4.
On today's episode, I have actually the first of a two-part series. The first part is with Debbie Cody, and then the second part, next episode, is going to be her husband, Gil Cody. So, Debbie, you're with me, right? Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, we were together recently, and we talked about a number of different things, and I had this idea to do this interview and publish it in February of 2020, which is Black History Month. And so I thought maybe we could start with your kind of younger days growing up. What kind of home did you grow up in? Was your family, would you describe it as a wealthy family, poor, middle class? Can you give us a little bit of an idea?
So I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I had 6 siblings, and we were a single-parent household. So by definition, we're middle class. We definitely weren't poor, and by no means were we wealthy, but we had what we needed and a little bit more.
So you had 6 siblings? I grew up with 3 of us, so I was one of 3. That sounds a little crazy for a single-parent household. Was it crazy?
It was crazy, but it was also fun. You learn to share, definitely learn to share, and not be so, you know, territorial with what you have.
Did you also learn to fight with 6 siblings?
Yeah, you definitely learn to fight, you know, fight face.
In this family, you said that seems to be solidly middle class. What did you learn about money when you were young?
So what I learned about money is that, in a nutshell, you need it. you got to have money to get the things that you want. And like I said, we were by no means wealthy. So we were told no, that we couldn't have some things, not because they didn't, you know, my mother didn't want us to have them, but we just couldn't afford things. 7 kids in a single parent household. My grandparents helped out a lot financially with us, but you still have to, you know, you got to have money. That's basically it.
I'm curious, Debbie, how do you know that your grandparents helped out financially? Is that something that you knew at the time? Is this something you learned about later on?
No, there was a time that we actually lived in the house with my grandparents.
Okay.
So, it was a multi-generational household, you know. So, you know, as you get older, you can kind of put 2 and 2 together.
And I imagine that your mom was the head of the household. Is that right?
That is correct.
So other than your mom, who would you think influenced you the most about money if you think back on what you learned early on? Other than your mom, who would you identify as being influential in the money area?
Early on, I would say my grandparents, and then as I became a young adult, it was my mother's brother and his wife.
Okay, so that would be your uncle?
My uncle, exactly.
All right, very good. And so you had a career in the military, right, in the Army?
I did, 22-year retired Army veteran.
Thank you very much for your service. And what age were you when you joined the military?
I joined the military right out of high school, so I joined at 17, but actually went in at 18. They have what they call delayed entry. So I went in at 18, and 22 years later, I retired.
Very impressive. So your mother had to sign off on that program when you were a 17-year-old?
No, because I did not go in until I was 18.
Okay.
I didn't require a parental signature.
And with military service, a lot of times, not always, a lot of times that's something that families have a tradition in that regard. My family, candidly, does not. My dad was drafted during the Vietnam War era. He didn't serve in Vietnam, but rather Korea in the Army. He was drafted and he served his time, but I wouldn't say my family necessarily has a military tradition of serving. Do you come from that type of family?
I do not come from that type of family. For me, joining the military was, for lack of a better term, it was out of necessity. So I graduated from high school, but I did not prepare myself for college, not academically, but just all the things that you need to do to go to college, take all the tests and all that. So my goal was to get a job right out of high school. Unfortunately, in order to get a job other than in the fast food industry, everyone was saying you needed experience, but nobody wanted to hire you for that experience.
Yes.
So for me, joining the military was so that I could get, air quote, experience, so that when I did apply for jobs, I could say, yes, I do have experience.
So that's interesting. So it's fair to say when you joined, the idea of having a career in the military was not top of mind. It was more necessity to get some experience for what would conceivably come next. Is that a good way to describe it?
That is correct. I went into, in the military, I was in the finance corps, and my aspirations as a civilian were to be an accountant, you know, with an actuary degree. So it was to go in, get the experience, get the money for college, the GI Bill, and then come out 4 years later and start my civilian goals in life.
Okay. So this isn't really what I had planned on asking you about. I'm just very curious. And as the host of the show, I could kind of do what I want. You know what I mean, Debbie? So when did you decide that it was going to be a career? Was it after the 4 years, or was it just something that kind of unfolded, you know, every so many years, saying, okay, I'm going to re-up for my next stint? When did you ultimately decide that you'd make a career of it and do your 20 years making you eligible for pension, full pension?
So it kind of unfolded. When I first went in, I signed up for 4 years. That was all I had intended to do.
Yes.
But at the end of the 4 years, I was stationed in Europe. And at that time, it was, you know, we didn't have all the computers and everything that we have now. So it was hard to find a job if you're in Europe. So I signed up for another tour.
Okay.
And one thing led to another. And the next thing you know, I was at the 10-year point. When you're at 10 years, you only have to do 20 to retire. So anybody that does 10 years and doesn't retire, I don't know. So at that point, I just went ahead and decided that I'm going to retire. I'm going to just stay in and retire. I still met the goal of getting my college degree. I got it before I got out of the military, using the GI Bill while I was in, and then going further while I was out, still using the GI Bill. So I met my goals that I intended to, and then threw in an extra one that, hindsight, they say it's 20/20 vision. It ended up being a really, really good thing that I did the 22 years, because it enabled us to be where we are today financially.
Very good. Good. Thank you for sharing. If we could switch gears slightly, I've been a financial planner my entire career, I think you know, and so that spans 27 years. And you know, this is my thing, right? I'm immersed in this. This is my area of expertise. It's an area that I do love. I'm still curious about it, Debbie, even today. Personal finance, money, investing, the psychology behind it, the emotion behind it, the math behind it. And it seems to me that the African-American community, which I am not a part of, is underserved in terms of education and personal finance. And from our dealings and conversations, you have taken it upon yourself to try and make sure that your family and people that are close to you are educated in the realm of personal finance, trying to give them a chance to have the success that you have and you and Gil have. So can you talk a little bit about the importance of this personal finance subject and the steps you've taken to help, for example, your children?
Sure. One of the things that we think is important is that you have to have a goal. And you have to start small. So the first thing you have to do is you have to start saving. But then once you amass a certain amount of money, I'm a big believer in going to the professionals. You know, if you need something sewn, you go to a seamstress. You know, if you need, you get where I'm going with this. So
absolutely. You need people to help you that are subject experts.
Everybody's not a subject matter expert. Everybody doesn't know about 401ks and CDs and, you know, this financial thing and that financial thing. So I believe that you should get the advice of somebody who knows, who's that's in their field. You've done it for 27 years. I was in finance, so I know how to count money. I know how to keep up with money. But as far as making that money work for me the best way, I feel like you go to the subject matter expert. So we try to make sure that our kids start early. We have a son that just graduated from college, and he has his first, as he calls it, adult job. unlike me, I didn't want him to have the same mindset that I had when I started out. Not that I was a big spender, but I didn't start saving right away. So I wanted him, while he doesn't have any, no family, no, you know, just himself and the money that he makes to take care of himself, to make sure that he pays himself and he starts early so that he can be where we are or even further than we are when he gets to his golden years. And the same thing, we try to, you know, pass that information on to people who may not have, they may have the money, but they don't have a financial planner. So that's our goal with how we saved and how we try to instill it and pass it on to other people.
Well, that's very well said. And a couple of things. Number one, I've had the pleasure of speaking to Isaiah recently. He's an impressive young man. So I bet that he does accomplish quite a bit in his life. He seems very, very sharp. And I teed up that question, Debbie, and I think maybe I should have made sure that we were kind of on the same page. Would you say that you agree with my opinion that the African-American community is underserved and undereducated in the realm of personal finance? Now, I know, look, this is a big country. There's lots of different people from all different backgrounds, and you know, the diversity is tremendous. But do you think that's a good general statement?
I would say that a generalization,
yes.
Not so much that they don't have access to it, but that they don't take advantage of the access to it. That, you know, you have to have somebody behind you, as in Isaiah's case and our other children's cases, pushing you towards that goal. So it's out there, but unless you're introduced to it, so yes and no.
So is it fair to say that you would appreciate it if more members of the community took advantage of resources that were out there and made better use of resources and made better decisions to increase their wealth and win with money more consistently? Is that a good way to phrase it?
Yeah, there are plenty of programs out there that teach you how to be academically successful, but not financially successful.
I understand. Okay.
If you
good.
If you incorporate with the academics, the financial, then you would have the whole package.
I understand. So along those lines, do you have any rules on handling money? You mentioned a few things earlier when you were speaking about your son and your children, about having a goal, saving money, seeking professional help. Aside from that, can you think of any rules on handling money you have on top of those couple of things you already mentioned?
I think a lot of people, especially young people, when they first enter into the job force, making money, especially if they're college graduates, making money that they've never made before, they have a tendency to spend beyond their means. They don't pay themselves first. You know, so I would say pay yourself first. And don't spend beyond your means. And by paying yourself first, have some money taken out of your paycheck and go to an account that's not easily accessible. And then don't go out there trying to buy a Rolls Royce on Budweiser budget.
I think you had shared with me one time, I think we might have been at dinner together, you, Gil, and I, and you had said, in thinking about your younger years in the service, I don't want to put words in your mouth because you coined the phrase more clever than I probably could. I think you said in the early years you didn't really need to spend any money, yet you didn't really know where it went. I think you used the military term, three hots in a cot.
Exactly.
I don't want to embarrass you, but in the early years you didn't have a lot of expenses. You were in the military. Yet, when you look back on it, you're not really sure what happened with the money that you earned. Is that right?
Right. So before I had a family, of course, once I had my family, I know where the money went. But
yeah.
But prior to that, I joined the military right out of high school, and then I did a full tour before I ever get married. So I got 4 years in the military. And, you know, hindsight, looking back, I'm like, where did that money go? You know, I should have been doing what I'm wanting the younger people now to do, is pay yourself first and not living beyond your means. Now, I certainly didn't live beyond my means because, you know, I've never been a big spender. Like, as long as the car has air conditioning and a radio and the windows roll down, I'm good, you know. So along those lines, I was fine. But the other things, you know, like, oh, well, I want to buy this and I want to buy it. So spending indiscriminately, not having a budget, not having a plan, not having a goal is where I would say I went wrong.
All right. Good. Have you, you know, we've spent this time mostly talking about, you know, the younger years in high school, growing up in the middle class family, joining the service, the first few years didn't build a lot of wealth. Then things started to adjust when you realized that you weren't handling money as well as you would like. But you're retired now, and thinking back to what we're talking about and everything that happened in those early years through where you are now, with the wisdom that comes with being retired and having a successful career, have your views on money changed over the years, especially now that you are in the retirement phase of your life?
So, you know, ideally, really, they haven't really changed very much. I still think that you need to have a plan, you need to have a budget, you need to have a goal. But the main thing that for people, I think, when you're living on a fixed income, per se,
right,
that it's better to live debt-free. To not have a bunch of credit card bills and, you know, car notes and things like that, because you are on a fixed budget. So if you try to pay for things for cash whenever possible, you know, I mean, if your car breaks down and you don't have, you know, the money to go out there and chunk it on a car, then, okay, go buy a car.
Gotcha.
But try and live debt-free. So that you can, debt-free with a budget, so that you can enjoy the money that you do have coming in and to make sure that you do have enough coming in.
All right, I got you. Would you say, was there a time in your life when you or you and Gil had an uncomfortable amount of debt, or was debt always either non-existent or manageable? Was there ever a time when you felt like you guys were too debt heavy to the point you were uncomfortable?
Oh, yeah. There was definitely a time when we were too. That's definite and a resounding yes. And so we had to make a plan together to dig ourselves out of that hole that we were in. So fortunately for us, we were both like-minded. That's another thing that's important. You can't have one spending willy-nilly and the other one, you know, trying to maintain a budget. So we were like-minded and decided that we got to get ourselves out of this hole. This doesn't make sense. We're making too much money between us to be this much in debt.
Right.
For whatever reason, you know, some reasons were beyond our control, and then some reasons were things that we could have done differently. But the bottom line is we needed to dig ourselves out of that hole, and together we did it. You know, we became debt-free.
Impressive. That's awesome. And in thinking about retirement, according to statistics, you retired at an early age. I don't know if we need to talk exactly what age you retired at. You know, I don't think I'm supposed to ask a woman how old they are. But it's a hard decision for people to make retiring, even at an early age. Can you talk about some of the factors you considered when deciding to retire, especially retiring young?
So I am one of those women who I'm comfortable with my age, and I'm glad for every year that I have. So I'm 60.
All right.
I retired when I was 57 a second time. So I was in the military for 22 years, stayed home for about 7 years, and then went back into the workforce for another 10 years. At the second retirement, fully retired and decided to, you know, relocate and come down here. So for us, you know, it was all about planning. We knew that we didn't want to work until we couldn't do anything else. You know, we like to travel. Like I said, that's the one thing that we splurge on is travel. And so we like to do that, but we wanted to make sure that we had the means to do that on a fixed income. We are both retired military, Gil and I. We also are disabled vets. And so we have money coming from different sources. We both retired from the civilian industry. So, you know, I call it different pots. You know, we've got money coming from different pots. And Gil was, he was the one who said, did all the calculations and said, okay, for us to retire comfortably, we have to have this amount of money coming in every month. And
right,
that money has to increase based on cost of living and inflation. So there has to be some kind of way for that money to increase, because you're going to need more as you live longer because of inflation and cost of living, you know, differences. So
right,
he was very good at that, and we lived, you know, within our means. And certainly the investments that we made to try and make sure that we have what we need when we need it.
Very good. And you talk about you and Gil being on the same page, I think is the term you used. It's so incredibly important in the realm of personal finance. And it's been shown that the number one cause for divorce in the U.S. is related to money troubles. And you talked about it. If you have wildly different views on money, to have a marriage be successful is going to be very difficult. And it's not just the lack of money, although that could be very stressful and create money fights, but even disagreements if there's a decent amount of income and wealth. If there's still disagreement on priorities and spending and how to handle money, it puts tremendous pressures on a marriage, and that's why it's the number one cause for divorce. So I'm so glad you had brought up about you guys being on the same page and I'm sure you don't agree on everything in the money arena, but generally being on the same page is a really key part of being successful with money. You see that in your own life, right?
We do. I mean, we, like you said, everything is not going to be like, is it okay if I buy this? And we do ask each other, you know, because we do have shared finances. So, but you have to be of the same mindset because, again, if, you know, I'm running out buying the latest everything or, you know, he loves the golf. If every time a new golf club comes out or you know, whatever, he's running out to buy that, your money's not going to go far.
And, right.
And we're not going to be on the same sheet of music and, you know, then arguments ensue. So, yeah, it's I can see where that would be a very big cause of family splitting up if you're not on the same accord financially.
I got it. Good. Let me ask you this. In thinking about a career in the military, can someone be financially successful today if they chose a military career? It's not the highest paying career that someone could conceivably choose from. And it's not an easy career, it seems to me. It's, of course, extremely honorable, noble service to the country. But just thinking about it in terms of financially, can somebody start a military career today and be financially successful? You think so?
I think it could be the catapult to being financially successful. By that, I mean it's going to teach you a trade. It's going to give you a skill set of being, the military term is dress right, dress, where you everything has a purpose and a means to an end. And so
okay.
It teaches you, I would think that I would like to see the United States have a 2-year commitment mandatory because it makes you grow up quickly, you know,
right.
From underneath your parents or whoever it is that your parent or your guardian and just setting you on the right path. As far as a military career, again, I think it'll set you on the right glide path. For us, one of the major things of a military career is that you retire with health benefits for life. And so many people lose their wealth to health.
Sure.
That's a big plus. So financially, you're probably going to have to go out and get another job once you retire if you're enlisted. Officers, they can retire and live a great life, you know. An enlisted person, unless they're way, way, way up in the ranks and live in, you know, Podunk, Missouri or wherever.
Yeah.
They're probably going to have to go out and get another job. But one thing that I will say is that you won't have to worry about medical benefits.
Yeah, that's a big advantage in today's world. It's an enormous vulnerability for a lot of people. And it's a difficult thing to solve for if you don't have lifetime medical health insurance. Medicare is great, but, you know, there's limits, so I understand what you're saying. Let me ask you this as we kind of wrap up, and thank you so much for your time and being so open. This is really a great conversation. I knew it would be, and it's completely met my expectations. In thinking about younger generation, I think you touched on this a little bit before in speaking about your own children. But what advice would you give to the younger generation about money and wealth building?
Like I said earlier, start now.
Yes.
You know, you're earning money, so start saving money now. And then to have goals, you know, and to work towards them, okay? So you don't have a car, you need a new car. So work towards that car, you know, and have a budget. It's very easy to spend beyond your means when you don't really have any expenses. You may still be living at home, those kind of things. So make sure you have a budget so that you can identify how your money is going out what's coming in and making sure that the two somewhat balance, you know, and then don't try to keep up with the Joneses, as they say. You know, just, you know, there's a new smartphone out or there's a new computer out or whatever it is that your fixation is on. You don't have to have the newest of everything. You know, I still have an iPhone. It works, it rings, and it connects to the internet. But they're all out there on the iPhone 11 now.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't need to have the newest and the latest and the greatest of everything as soon as it comes out. Save up your money. You know, let that car note now be money in the bank. Let that phone bill now be money in the bank. And that's how you pay for things in cash the next time.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you for letting me interview you on the subject of personal finance, building wealth, winning with money, increasing your financial IQ. Anything that we didn't touch on that you were hoping to touch on today in our time together?
No, I think that pretty much you covered it all.
Beautiful. Well, again, thank you so much for taking some time. I appreciate it. My next episode, I'm going to be talking to Gil, and I'm really looking forward to that as well because you guys are really savvy and try and do the right thing, not just for yourselves, but you go out of your way to try and help others around you, and that's very noble, and I appreciate it. So thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome, and you'll have a great time speaking with him because he's the one with the financial savvy, knows how to talk the lingo.
Now, you know this is being recorded, and he's going to hear you say that, right?
It's okay. You got to talk sometime.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Debbie.
All right. Bye.
Please reach out to us. Go to the website, www.elliottwealth.com. We'd love to help you out. Sign up for a complimentary consultation if you're not a client of ours already. And I always ask this. It's super important to me. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast already, please do so and recommend it to a friend. Thank you. I will be back with you on the next episode of the Simply Financial Podcast very soon.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of SagePoint Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through SagePoint Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management LLC, not affiliated with SagePoint Financial.
Simply Financial is part of the Exvadio Podcast Network. You can find Exvadio Podcasts at exvadio.com/podcast, the Apple Podcasts app, iTunes Store, iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you find podcasts. So join us and stay informed and entertained.